And here's how Socrates makes his move. First thing he does is establish two different relationships. First, the relationship between being approved and getting approved, between those two concepts or modes of being that I just talked about. He does this at 10C and repeats it at 10E. And the relationship is established in those two places. Then the second relation that gets established is the relationship between getting approved and being holy. And then he puts these two different relationships together to form an argument. Now, the relationships can be expressed in two pairs of sentences. In each pair, one of the sentences is true and one of them is false. And here are the two pairs of sentences. First pair. Let's start with the true sentence in the first pair. Something is being approved because it gets approved. This is true. What's false is that something gets approved because it's being approved. This is like pointing out that Miriam is an employee because she's employed. It's not that she's employed because she's an employee. I mean, supposing we ask the question, why is Miriam employed at that place? The answer is going to have to be something about the fact that they employed her. You can't say, oh, she's employed there because of the fact that she's an employee, as though being an employee got her the job. Whereas, indeed, if you wanted to explain why she's an employee, exactly what you would say is, well, she's an employee because they employ her, because she's employed there. So the priority of the action-passion pair to the state or condition of the thing that undergoes the passion, that is the object of the action, is the first pair that Socrates establishes. And the second pair goes like this. First, something gets approved because it's holy, and Socrates says, that's true. What's false is that something is holy because it gets approved. This fact is what Euthyphro agreed to at the beginning of the discussion. Very, very subtly, Socrates got him to agree to the following fact. It isn't that the holy is holy because the gods love it. They love it because it's holy. The gods are not arbitrary or capricious in their approval. They don't just walk around approving of things and then those things become holy. Oh, no, they approve things and love things because of the fact that they're holy. Now, all of these things get put together by the reasoning and page 11a. And the reasoning is very complicated, but if you read it slowly and carefully, you'll see how to understand it. Socrates says, suppose that the opposite of the conclusion at 10e were true. That is, suppose that being divinely approved and holy really were the same thing. Then if we substitute holy for being approved in the first of those pairs, and being approved for holy in the second, the two true statements would turn out to be false, because the first would say that something is holy because it gets approved, which is the same as the false second one, and the second true one would say that something gets approved because it's being approved, which is the same as the false first one. So if we assume the opposite of the conclusion, the true turns out to be false, and the false true. It's a dizzying piece of reasoning. You're not going to understand it unless you go back and read the passage very carefully. But with the help of this little précis I've given out, I hope you can go back and see how it goes. And the argument then concludes by saying, since the opposite of the conclusion must be false, the conclusion itself must be true. Now, notice that in all of this, critical is the view that Socrates elicits easily from Euthyphro. It's not because the gods love the holy that it's holy. It's the other way around. They love it because it's holy. That seems in some sense right to us. But as the argument emerges, it becomes more questionable. And consider similar claims, similar questions. Is a runner out because an umpire calls him out? Or does the umpire call him out because he's out? Is a law constitutional because the Supreme Court declares it to be so? Or does the Supreme Court declare it to be so because it is so? Here, notice the complexity of the distinction between the sense in which judgment is determined by objective fact and in which judgment itself is constitutive of fact is figured by Plato as particularly pointed in the domain of understanding what the gods want and therefore of holiness. All right, so that's that argument. But what does emerge is that Euthyphro is unable to articulate clearly the difference between the essential nature of the holy and something like being beloved of the gods, which on this argument turns out merely to be an attribute of the holy. So at the end of the dialogue, Euthyphro throws up his hands, walks away saying he has other things to do. No definition has been agreed upon. What's then emerged from this encounter? Well, one thing we can say is that Euthyphro has been unmasked. He's been revealed to be a charlatan, not to have the understanding that he claims to. But in addition, I want to suggest that what we've seen is the way that the understanding of the nature of holiness doesn't emerge from any one of the definitions or accounts that Euthyphro offers. It doesn't follow, however, either that Euthyphro doesn't understand the nature of holiness, nor that there's some other account that somehow just got missed but would have been the right one. In some sense, I want to suggest we are, in fact, given the right account. It's just that we have to learn how properly to understand that as the right account. Well, in the next lecture, I'm going to begin by trying to explain to you how that sense works, and looking back at this dialogue to see a way in which we can think of the understanding emerging from the confrontation among several different accounts. So next time, we'll look at that, and then we'll take a look at another dialogue in which the same pattern of understanding is seen to emerge.
This ends Lecture 2. If you borrowed this course from a public library and would like your own copy of the course guide for future reference, call Recorded Books at 1-800-636-3399, and we'll send you a free copy. A shipping charge will apply.